occasionally have people come into my office and say, oh, thank you very much for doing this. Mm-hmm. And it's not uncommon that I feel pretty guilty because what they don't understand is how much it blesses my life.
Welcome to The Lisa Show, where we take a good look at life. Hey, it's Lisa. This is The Lisa Show. And a few minutes ago, I got a text that made my blood run cold. And if you've had teenagers or know a teenager or are teenager adjacent, maybe you can relate to this. The text said, "Did you throw away my carne asada fries?" And for context, okay, there were some meat-covered fries on my kitchen island this morning, and they were half-eaten and left in a styrofoam box overnight. And so, like any other half-eaten meal I find on my kitchen counter after more than 12 hours, I just threw it away because, you know, that's gross. But I can tell from the punctuation in this text that the person who sent it already knows that I was the one who threw it away and isn't asking out of curiosity. So please send thoughts and prayers to me and my teenager during this difficult time. Loosely related, if only because it has to do with the agony I inflict on my offspring, I posted that video on Instagram a little while ago while I was dancing in my kitchen, and at a touch of magic MN commented, "I want to know how your children respond to videos like this. My kids were never embarrassed by anything we did until we danced." Well, I just want to say that I feel like it is my job to embarrass my children. I've been dancing in front of them, to them, at them, their whole lives, and now they're like, it's just like how I'm breathing, right? Like sometimes it just annoys them and sometimes it doesn't, but it certainly doesn't embarrass them to the level that I wish it did. Anyway, okay, let's get into the episode. This season, we've been talking about how to do good better. Last episode, we tackled how to help others without getting burned out. And today, we're exploring the other side, how helping others can actually help you. Okay, there's so much here, and I don't know if we'll get it all in a single episode, so buckle in. I'm going to tell you about some of the scientifically proven benefits of service and how it affects the quality of life of the giver, not just the receiver. And then you're going to hear a story, a dramatic story, about somebody who was a giver and had to completely change their relationship with serving others after a life-changing accident. And then we'll debunk some myths. But first, the science of giving back. Studies show that there are distinct physical and emotional benefits that come from serving others. Service decreases depression and increases happiness. Service increases the effectiveness of your immune system and decreases your awareness of pain. And outside of the science, most of us have probably experienced this before, consciously or unconsciously. Doing good has a reciprocal effect. And Dr. Steve Treziak, who you may remember as the doctor and compassionomics expert from last episode, he told me another one of these benefits.
Serving others consistently over time is associated with longevity, longer life. A lot of people are surprised by that. I want to be clear that it's not a one and done. We need to make it part of our identity, and it's repeated and a habit. So consistently over time, if we serve others on a regular basis, there is a increase in longevity that's been associated with that consistently over more than a dozen research papers.
We actually live longer if we serve other people, and not just longer. The way we perceive and experience that time also changes as we serve. Ken Larson from the Food and Care Coalition pointed this out when he talked to me about serving clients at the homeless shelter.
I lost a daughter, I went through a divorce, all that stuff. And one of the things that helped me get through it is like when I see that my clients have struggles too, and like, hey, you know, they keep coming, they keep going. I at least have a house, I have a car that works, I have a job. Like, hey, I can, if they can go through this and do these things, I can too, you know. And And I feel like a lot of them, you know, I mean, sometimes that's all they have is God, and say, hey, help God, I need help just for today. And I see that here, like sometimes we call them our little miracles, you know. We'll get something in and I'll be like, oh man, if I only had this, I could do this. And then like all of a sudden somebody will just be like, oh, I just had this excess thing that you just happen to need. So like I said, I mean, sometimes God just puts people where he needs to do what he needs to do, so.
Gratitude, hope, God's hand in his life and the lives of others. This is what Ken notices as he serves others. While these benefits may not be as tangible as decreasing your blood pressure or lowering your cholesterol, they are every bit as significant. Now let me introduce you to Dale Hull. As you'll hear, Dale has always been a giver.
I was a practicing OBGYN for 10 years in the south part of the Salt Lake Valley, doing well, kind of hit my stride as a practicing OBGYN. And OB is an amazing specialty because you get to work with families and you're helping people bring kids into this life. And it's a very demanding specialty, but I enjoyed it very much.
And then 25 years ago, Dale's life took a sudden turn.
In July of 19th, 1999, I failed to complete a backflip on my backyard trampoline and unfortunately dislocated my neck in such a way that it caused a cervical spinal cord injury, and I found myself completely paralyzed from the neck down. I was taken to my local hospital, confirmed that I was probably going to be in a power assist wheelchair the rest of my life, and went through my hospitalization, which is a 3.5 month ordeal. It was a wild ride of hope and disappointment and complications. So I entered the world of paralysis suddenly and unexpectedly. And probably the biggest challenge, I think, at that moment was not the fact that I knew I was paralyzed. It was the fact that I thought it was so unfair that God gave me something that I had no preparation. I didn't know what to do with it.
Yeah.
Right? We're all going to have problems. That's not the secret. The problem is, it's going to show up on a random Monday afternoon, and it's going to be something that's not on your list, and it's going to be completely overwhelming, and you're going to go, you're kidding me, right? You're going to give me quadriplegic paralysis? Can you not like see that I don't know what to do with this?
Yeah.
I think that's where the challenges come in, right? Mm-hmm. If we're prepared for it, then we go, okay, here it is.
Yep. This makes sense.
I'm set up.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. I know who to call. I had no idea.
Even after Dale's 3 months in the hospital were over, his recovery wasn't. Dale had a long road ahead of him. And not only was he trying to heal physically, he was struggling to navigate a world in which he used to be completely independent and where he was at this point now on the receiving end most of the time.
I get home and I'm still very dependent. I'm in a wheelchair. I don't have individual finger function. I can walk maybe 20 to 30 feet with a gait belt and a walker. I'm getting my physical and occupational therapy at home, which is very convenient, but quickly became disillusioned because the therapists are constrained by insurance restrictions. They only have enough time to help you prepare to live with your disability. And I wanted them to change me before they changed my doorknobs. Mm. You know, spend some time to help get me to the highest level I could.
And then, 7 months after his injury, Dale met a physical therapist named Jan Black, who did take the time. Jan was determined to help Dale reach his physical goals. She started an intense physical training course for Dale that involved working several hours a day, 5 days a week. This training was such a huge success that by the 2002 Winter Olympics, 2.5 years after his paralyzing accident, Dale was given the opportunity to carry the Olympic torch. He walked independently with no assistive device, surrounded by hundreds of supporting friends.
It was kind of my George Bailey, "Oh, It's a Wonderful Life" moment, because I'm surrounded by all these people that love me, right? Mm-hmm. And they're there just for me. So it's incredibly amazing. But I was still paralyzed. I couldn't go back to work as an OBGYN because my hands are still partially numb and partially paralyzed, which is not a good thing if you're a surgeon.
Yeah.
So I was still kind of lost. Like, what do I do now?
Dale wanted to give back, but didn't have access to his old methods of doing good. He needed a new purpose, and he stumbled upon it in an unexpected way.
I had met a lot of other people who had been paralyzed, and they wanted what I was getting. And they deserved what I was getting, and they needed what I was getting, but it wasn't available. So Jan and I started to talk about, is there something we can do to help these other folks? And if we were going to do it, how would we do it? We started kicking around some ideas, and some days we would think big, and then some days we would say, that's crazy. And in what I describe as my kind of made-for-TV moment, is I was on the internet and I ran across the quote attributed to Gandhi, "You must be the change you want to see in the world." And as soon as I read it, I said, oh my gosh, I wish I wouldn't have read that, right?
Now I have to do something with it.
So anyway, we got busy. We wrote a business plan. We created a nonprofit organization. And then the opportunity was thrust on us in 2004. And literally, we put $500 in the bank and we rented a 1,000 square foot room in a strip mall and said, okay, we're going to be a spinal cord injury recovery center. That was 20 years ago. And we're still doing it. And we just kept expanding. We wrote grants. We started to learn about how to run a nonprofit. And we always tease that, you know, you got a partially paralyzed gynecologist and a physical therapist trying to run a nonprofit organization. Yeah. So it's a pretty crazy experience.
Maybe the life path you didn't see.
No, not at all. We do physical, occupational, and speech therapy for adults and children who have experienced paralysis from spinal cord injury, brain injury, stroke, cerebral palsy, spina bifida, and similar neurological conditions. And in 20 years, you know, we've never turned away anybody for financial reasons. And to date, we've treated probably several thousand individuals from at least 28 different states and 4 different countries. And we're still going.
Dale created his own opportunity so that he could give others the help that made such a difference to him. And while his organization had gone on to do extraordinary good for so many people, Dale pointed out the impact this has had on him.
I occasionally have people come into my office and say, oh, thank you very much for doing this. Mm-hmm. And it's not uncommon that I feel pretty guilty because what they don't understand is how much it blesses my life and the people I've had a chance to meet. The people that we provide care for are the most grateful, courageous people that you'll ever want to meet. I mean, they're just amazing. And I could fill up your entire time telling you story after story.
Dale and Jan are doing amazing work. They are helping others, and helping others is helping them. Dale's service has changed his own life. He's gone from feeling angry and lost and abandoned to knowing peace and purpose and value. It caught my attention when Dale said that he feels guilty sometimes when people thank him because his work makes him happy too. Folks, we've unlocked a new kind of guilt. Not only can we feel guilty for the good things we aren't doing, we can also feel guilty for feeling good about the good things we are doing. I do think that this is very indicative of the broader trend and how we tend to think about social impact. Often we think, if this is making me happy, maybe it isn't good for other people. And of course, from outside Dale's perspective, it's very easy for me to see that this is a fantastic situation for both him and his patients. They are making each other's lives better, definitely. And Dale doesn't need to feel guilty for getting fulfillment out of his career helping others. But this is sort of a common mindset. We think, well, if something's bad for me or it hurts, it must be good for others. But if it's good for me, I might not really be helping or I might not be doing it right. To see if this is a common phenomenon or, you know, just me overthinking things, I spoke to Dr. Ryan Davis, a philosophy professor at Brigham Young University. He explained this fallacy in how we look at helping others.
I think there's a lot of real life cases where you want to do something good, but you want to do something good in a kind of self-punishing way. And I think that the challenge for that is that you want to do something good in a way that if you want it to be bad for you, and you're like, oh, you're measuring the badness for you as a way of, as a heuristic, as a proxy for how good it is for other people.
So this fallacy is when we think we have to do something in a punishing way for it to really matter for others, when the truth is it's not a zero-sum game. You don't have to lose for someone else to win. And just because you're getting personal fulfillment out of serving doesn't mean you're doing it wrong. And when we bring in the context of building relationships as a core part of service, like we talked about last episode, this makes sense. In a good relationship, both people benefit. But if one person approaches it with an attitude of, oh, I have to do this even though I really don't want to, the relationship probably won't feel good for either party. I saw this situation play up really close and personal when my late husband had ALS. Most people who came to visit him were really great and did things like spending time with him. But there was this one person who came to visit where it felt painfully obvious that they just wanted to be seen as a good person for visiting. Like, you know, check the box, but didn't actually want to be there or help with any specific needs. They were just there for a social media photo op. It felt really gross, but it was also kind of funny how obvious it was. And I do wonder how often we do that to other people, knowingly or unknowingly. How often do we both miss out on the benefits of service because we're just doing them out of an obligation rather than love? The truth is, we can love others and love what we're doing for them. This can especially be the case when we serve each other using our natural talents. Ryan mentioned why this is.
And so similarly, there's a lot of things where like your use of your talents to produce something, if other people value that, and they're like, oh, we actually really want you to do that, we'll pay you some money to do that, or we'll express thanks to you to do that, it makes you feel good. As a philosophical matter, the fact that you're accruing a benefit from some action is not a reason to think that it wasn't morally good.
Ryan's saying that even when we help people doing what we are really good at and it comes easily to us, that still counts. It's not like we have to bend ourselves into some new shape and make ourselves uncomfortable for our impact to really matter because somehow that makes it better. For example, I have my own set of talents, but baking, not so much. So if someone moves into my neighborhood, I shouldn't frantically ferment some sourdough starter and then wrestle with some gluten and work myself into a lather in an effort to bake bread for them just because it would take a lot of extra effort and time. I mean, that doesn't really feel authentic to me in the slightest. Instead, I'll do what I do best. I'll introduce myself to them and talk to them and laugh with them and invite them to be my new best friend. That it's easy for me. And it's good for them, right? No sweat, no punishment, no sacrifice needed. We all win. I'd like to share a very tender example of this in my own life, where someone used their talents to bless my family while blessing themselves in the process. This story takes place in a magical land called Xanadu. When my husband Christopher was diagnosed with ALS, our friend Jenny Barlow came and asked him, "What can I do for you?" Now, by this time, Chris and Jenny had done almost all of their creative projects together. They shared a creative language. They understood each other. So Chris looked at Jenny and said, "I just want to laugh." And then Jenny decided to do what she did best. She went to the theater. Jenny and Chris had done the musical Xanadu years back and had laughed so hard in the process of making this ridiculous show that she knew she wanted to do that again for him. Now, if you haven't seen Xanadu, it really is the most ridiculous musical. It's one of those musicals where anything goes. Everyone on roller skates? You bet. More glitter? Coming right up. Should we have aerial artists come down on silk ropes? Sure. A centaur? Oh, bring him in. Medusa entering from the left. You get the idea. So Jenny decided to remount Xanadu as a fundraiser for Christopher. And Jenny used her talents and connections to bring people in from Broadway. They spent an intense week in rehearsals where Chris directed and Jenny did the choreography. And it worked. And it was packed every night. And every night, Christopher was on the front row laughing so hard, he was crying. And our kids came and we laughed and laughed every night. Jenny had done exactly what Christopher had asked for, doing what she does best, theater. And not only did that play help bless our family by raising some of the money for our home remodel and wheelchair accessible van that we desperately needed, but it blessed Jenny and the theater community too. We didn't know that Christopher would die in the middle of a global pandemic and that he wouldn't get to have a funeral. So Xanadu became the opportunity for all of Christopher's friends and colleagues to honor him and thank him. It was their goodbye because they wouldn't be able to do that later on. Talk about service that blessed all of us. So if you're ever wondering if using your talents counts as service, even if the service doesn't hurt, even if the service comes easily to you, it does. It totally does. The truth is, service can be joyful and fun and natural and easy and still matter. Service isn't meant to just bless the people around us. It's meant to bless us too. And that's good news for all of us who want to not only do this for ourselves, but teach it to our kids. And actually, next episode, we're going to be getting into that. How do you involve the whole family in a meaningful way and raise service-minded kids? But in the meantime, this attitude of taking something precious and personal and using that energy to help others reminds me of Dale, who wanted to do what he did because he cared about bringing other people the help that had changed his own life. And when he started his organization, NeuroWorks, it brought meaning into his life too. Here's what he thinks about the whole experience looking back.
I'm 25 years down the road now from my accident. And I've had so many amazing experiences that I can say that the worst thing that ever happened to me is actually the best thing that ever happened to me. This whole thing has been a blessing in my life, really. And I want to do a small thing with great love, which is the Mother Teresa thing, right? So do just find something that you can do a small thing with great love. And if it starts to resonate and all of a sudden more opportunities, jump in, you know. Yeah. I mean, if you're passionate about something, you'll figure out how to make it work.
I find this so inspirational because everyone can do a small thing with great love. And it reminded me of something Steve or Dr. Treziak said about love and joy in this service. At one point, he and I were discussing how compassion and service tie into our spirituality.
We talked earlier about faith traditions and how serving others is a common thread. I mean, mm-hmm. If you go to the Gospels, Jesus said, the greatest among you will be the one who serves.
Yeah.
And I don't think he was talking about getting the corner office. I think he was talking about having the most robust, joyful, fulfilling life when he talked about the greatest among you. And so I think that it's a truth that goes all the way back to the very beginning.
Those that serve are the greatest among us, not because they are more important or more successful or more popular. They are the greatest because their lives are full of great things, fulfillment, satisfaction, joy. I'm so grateful to Dale, Ken, and Ryan for sharing their thoughts with me. Helping others can give our lives meaning and purpose no matter what we've lost. And we don't have to be self-punishing in our efforts to help. Like my friend Jenny showed me, service doesn't have to exist outside of our wheelhouse. Instead, that may be the very place where we make the most impact. Helping others helps you. And helping others heal will heal you too.
The Lisa Show is a production of BYU Radio, hosted by Lisa Valentine Clark. This episode was produced by Avery Stoneley with help from Becca Hurley, Blake Morse, Erica Price, Kenny Mears, and Michael Combs, with music and post-production by Kit Merrill. For more information about our guests Dale Hull, Ken Larson, Stephen Treziak, and Ryan Davis, links to their work will be in our show notes. If you haven't subscribed to The Lisa Show on YouTube, you can find even more content on our channel, including The Council of Moms, filmed live in our studio. As always, thanks for your messages. We read them all, and thank you for listening.
There's another podcast you might like from the BYU Radio family of podcasts, In Good Faith. Join Stephen Cap Perry as he connects with believers from various religions, Christians, Buddhists, Jews, Muslims, and more.
Through their captivating stories, deepen your understanding of faith, religion, and spirituality. Stephen's global perspective, cultivated through extensive travel, brings a really unique richness to each conversation. Elevate your appreciation for the divine. In Good Faith, an inspiring journey of unity and enlightenment. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.